From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today we'll hear from a group of conservative voters on how they're feeling about this year's presidential election.
It is a difficult decision because I voted Democrat in the past, and I was almost kind of taught that that was the party that supported us.
Then we'll break down what to expect at next week's Republican National Convention.
Barring something unusual, like candidates saying, you know what, I changed my mind, I don't want this job anymore, I free my delegates to vote whoever they want to. Otherwise, these people are committed to the candidate that they're sent there for, and they're going to cast votes for him or her.
Plus, we'll learn how Milwaukee Public Schools kids are going to help out during the RNC. All of that is coming up on Lake Effect. But first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. Today, we'll break down what's expected to happen at next week's Republican National Convention. But first, we'll hear from a roundtable of voters. Wisconsin will play a crucial role in this year's presidential election as an important swing state. Because of this, WUWM has been talking with voters about what issues are important to them and how they feel about the candidates, Democratic President Joe Biden and Republican former President Donald Trump. WUWM brought together a group of voters for a roundtable discussion ahead of the upcoming RNC. All are Trump supporters, some enthusiastic and some hesitant. The conversation was moderated by Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski and WUWM's Mayan Silver. It was recorded on June 26th, before the presidential debate. A note to our listeners, you'll be hearing people express their own political opinions in a free-flowing conversation.
We will start with Alex H. on my right and go round. But first question is very simple. In one word, how are you feeling about the November presidential election?
Ecstatic.
Giselle?
Mm-hmm. Hopeful.
Rebecca?
Yeah, I would say hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Excited.
And Greg?
Transition.
So I'll start with Greg, actually. Why do you say transition? Do you want to add anything to why that is the word you picked?
I think people are looking for change, expecting change, and expecting empowerment with that change.
Looks like everyone's overall fairly positive and excited about the election coming up. And I see a lot of nodding of heads. Okay, so this is a group of conservative voters, which we already know, or conservative leaning. And we'd like to know more about that. So we'd like to know what issues make you align with the Republican Party or conservatism. And we'll start with, go ahead, Greg.
To me, conservatism means to me to conserve certain ideas, certain institutions, certain ways of successful methods of operation that we've used in the past, certain successful models. It means to conserve those things, values and principles, and hold on, kind of hold on to what we've done right. That's what I think it means to me, and it's why I'm a conservative.
So conservatism, is there anything in terms of the ideas or issues that speaks to you?
In particular, they're just a set of core values that society has shifted away from. And we tend to do that when we get successful and when we start, things are going good and right. We tend to, as a people, we tend to move away from the things that we should conserve when things are going too well. And that's what you mean. You have to go back and conserve some of those old ideas because we're losing it in many different areas.
Go ahead, Alex L.
Thank you. I can probably just simply take it from there a little bit and expand on it. Conservatism today is not the same as what conservatism was meant in the 1960s, not even the 1970s. I am an immigrant in this country, a refugee immigrant from persecution back in the Soviet Union. And conservatism to me, when I came over, I was very young, and I was a Democrat. and I voted Democrat. And there is a big difference between what Democrat Party stood for back then versus what is leftism today.
So we're asking most of you to, we're asking you to basically explain why you personally align with conservatism.
I align personally with conservatism because I see the leftist side, not liberal, leftist side, which is represented by Democrats today, as anti-Semitic, which I've experienced and seen in the Soviet Union, throughout the world, and it has now come to nest in the Democratic Party in America. So anti-Semitism is one of the reasons I'm conservative. Individualism is another reason I'm conservative, because collectivism is the other side. I believe in individualism. And the other thing is economic freedom, both economic, social, and personal freedom is the reason I am a conservative based on today's definition of that word. So that's where we're at.
Thank you, Alex. Okay, go ahead, Rebecca.
Yeah, so I'm a conservative because I, you know, we all need the government to do certain things for us, but we don't need the government to be in our lives, like making decisions for us. And I think a really good example these days is of all the things that happened with COVID, where the government decided, oh, we're going to shut down. And the government decided, oh, we need to have mandates for vaccinations and those kinds of things. And in my own household or in my own community, I can make choices that affect me, that affect my family. And I want to be able to do that and not have government always telling me, oh, you need to do this because we're expecting everyone to do that. No, there's a place where I need to be able to say that, no, my choice is not what you're saying. I don't believe what you're saying. And so that's why I'm a conservative.
All right, thanks. Go ahead, Giselle.
So I wouldn't consider myself a conservative per se. I live in that uncomfortable middle ground gray area that exists right now in politics. Why I lean more towards conservative policy in my life today is because I believe in democracy and the American dream. I was fortunate enough to experience it through my education, and I want that for my siblings that are coming right behind me and one day for my future children.
Thank you, Giselle. Okay, Alex H.
So I'm a conservative because I believe in the true conservative grassroots, and those can be classified as America having a secure border, limited government, low taxes, freedom of speech, freedom to own guns. So I fully believe in the grassroots, and that's why I'm a conservative.
All right. So hypothetically, say the election's tomorrow, who would you vote for president and why? Alex H.?
I'm voting for Donald J. Trump. I believe he entails the grassroots conservative movement extremely well, and his 4 years in office were a huge success. So he's got my vote.
Giselle.
It would be a very difficult decision all the way up to the poll, but I would also vote for Trump because under the Biden administration, my sister's education has been in jeopardy. And so that would be the basis of my decision.
I, too, would vote for Donald Trump. I feel like Alex said, that he had a very successful 4 years, and I was surprised that he was not elected this last time around. And I feel like he did not finish what he started, and he will hopefully have a chance to finish what he started and do even more, considering certain things going on in the country, like the open border and crime wave in different cities and things along those lines. So,
all right, and Alex.
I would crawl through any object to vote for Donald Trump this time around. And I would support him. I would support others who would support him. And the fact that they just convicted him of political crimes, political persecution, in my opinion, just brings back Soviet Union to me. I will make it a point to make sure I bring out as many people as possible to vote for Donald Trump.
And Greg?
I support Donald Trump.
All right. So, Giselle, I want to swing back to you real quick. Can you explain a little more about your sister's educational experience and why you think it was in jeopardy under Biden?
So I am a beneficiary of the Milwaukee Parental School Choice Program, and my sisters now attend a charter school. Biden has been very open on his lack of support for school choice and charter schools. One of my sisters is autistic, and
her school has played such a huge role in her being confident in going to university after. And so as us three just being the first in our family to ever be educated, coming from a father that, you know, he was a fisherman, my mom was a housewife, our education matters so much to us. And so to know that we live in a community where our schools are underperforming and these options are kind of like our way to escape generational poverty.
And then another thing that you said was that it'd be a hard slog up until the ballot box, right? Do you wish that you had other options besides Trump?
No. So it is a difficult decision because I voted Democrat in the past. And I was almost kind of taught that that was the party that supported us. And so thinking for myself and coming to understand why I wanted to vote differently this time has been kind of like a touring process where I'm like, am I betraying my community for thinking about my vote a little bit more deeper? That's why I feel so torn. And I would have preferred to have more options and also like just a political climate that wasn't so hostile. But right now, this is just kind of the options that we have.
This is Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski here with reporter Mayan Silver. We're talking to a roundtable of five conservative-leaning Wisconsin voters about what's on their minds ahead of the November presidential election.
So basically, it seems like everyone here in this room is fairly solid about voting for Trump. How do you feel about the direction of the Republican Party? Because Trump's at the helm. Are you all on board with that? Is there anything that gives you pause? Go ahead, Alex L.
Today's political environment is such that I have absolutely no concerns on the Republican side. As a party, I can't think of a single, well, maybe one total issue that I would have any concern or disagreement on at all. I've never had this before in my entire life where one party has gone so far left off the rails that the other party, no matter what demonization is being done, when you look at the reality of who the people are in this room. We are normal people with normal jobs. And any one of us who speaks the way we're speaking here out in public, and if there is leftists out there, we take so much incoming that the demonization of all of us is intense. I'm in the Jewish community. 75% of the Jewish community is liberal. I am attacked.
So you mentioned that there was one issue that you were partially torn on. What is that?
I believe there's a divisive issue on abortion. And that's an issue I believe that should be put to the people. It should be put to a vote. And people need to decide. Period. It's not up to politicians to direct us, any of us. We should have a choice. They shouldn't do all in or all out. They should put in number of weeks and let the people decide at what period abortion should be cut off.
Thank you, Alex. All right, so we're going to go to Giselle just in terms of weighing in on the direction of the Republican Party under Trump.
So the way that I see it, I'm immersed in politics because I am so passionate about education. And so when I vote, I'm voting for policy, not for candidates. The exposure that I've had to the Republican Party has been through leaders that I admire that are champions for education freedom. And so what I would say is that when I'm, you know, looking at the future of the Republican Party, the sentiment is that, you know, getting through these 4 years, we are going to be collateral regardless on what side you're voting. So it's kind of picking your poison, seeing which issues you're most passionate about and you truly want to see a difference, and allowing that it kind of plays out and see what comes out at the end of these 4 years. So I'm not going into the polls like picking for a Valentine. And it's just kind of how I would describe it. Like, I am very hopeful that because these Trump has expressed his support for education freedom, I will see that change during his term.
So would you say that you are a one-issue voter at this point for Trump, or is it multiple issues?
Yeah, I would say I am. One-issue voter.
One issue. Okay. So we're talking about the direction of the Republican Party under Trump. Rebecca, if you'd like to weigh in.
I mean, I agree with Alex Ellison that, you know, if we speak up in public, we have people that will come against us. I work in Milwaukee Public Schools is where I actually work as a teacher. And so I also am very cautious when I go to larger meetings with the in the school district that, you know, can I speak out on something? I feel like I can't oftentimes speak up on something that I'm that I disagree with because I know that, you know, maybe a certain high majority of the people in the room would be in favor of what it is that they're talking about. I agree that abortion is a very challenging topic, and you know, I applaud your thought that it's not something that politicians should really be weighing in on, that yes, the people should decide. I feel like that is a big issue that maybe causes a lot more people pause to vote for Trump, that they're concerned that he's going to do something related to that.
So we're talking about the direction of the Republican Party under Trump. We've also got what happened on January 6th and his claims about winning Wisconsin, which was legitimately won for President Biden. Do you have any responses to that or responses to Trump critics who say that Trump is a threat to democracy?
As far as January 6th goes, my personal belief is that there was no connection between what Trump said or did that day and what the people said or did in the Capitol. I believe the two things were completely separate from each other, and I think that Trump was falsely accused of something that he did not or had no knowledge of and was not involved in.
Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I think just generally the party as a whole is becoming a lot stronger. I think people and conservatives are starting to wake up and realize that they can't just sit in the back and not share their voice, and they are speaking up and sharing their voices and being heard more and more often. And I've seen that, you know, in Marquette and everything. So I think we're just getting a lot stronger as a whole.
What would you say to someone who's concerned about, you know, the view that Trump is a threat to democracy? Like, if you're having this conversation with someone, how would you address that?
He's not a threat to democracy. Us as conservatives and Trump believe in fair elections. You should have a voter ID when you go to vote, some sort of ID. I don't think that's against democracy to be able to prove who you are when you're submitting your ballot.
Go ahead, Alex L.
I just wanted to respond to that last question about Trump being a threat. I would argue against the entire narrative. I don't think Trump demonstrated any part of a threat. And I believe that's one of those demonization things that I was mentioning about. I understand it's been set as a narrative, as a fact right now, especially in the media. It is not. I would urge anybody in the media to tell me what is it that Trump has done, not said, that's a threat to democracy. Every single thing he did, including in Wisconsin, was legal action. He took it to court. It is exactly what he's supposed to do. He didn't raise an army. He didn't take arms. The January 6th was not an insurrection. It was never an insurrection. That's a word the Democrats came up with to demonize the Republicans. I would definitely hold the people who did violence accountable. All the other verbiage about it and the whole insurrection language is nonsense. It is complete nonsense. I'm sorry, please.
Well, I mean, this issue is being litigated in federal court. So, you know, I mean, that's what's happening. Trump had said for, you know, months and months and years that the election was rigged.
And the Democrats said it against him. They didn't show up. Hillary continued to say the election was rigged the entire time through today. She continues to say his election was rigged in 2016. This is nothing unusual for a candidate to say, but what did he do? He took it to court. He didn't take it to the streets. There was never anything going on in the streets as far as violence goes. This was a minor thing on January 6th that I disagree with. Of course, I condemn it, and it shouldn't have happened. That's not it at all. Yes, he talks blusterous. You're absolutely right that maybe a point of disagreement lots of Republicans have with him. However, he does things by the book, by the law.
Biden did win Wisconsin by nearly 21,000 votes. It withstood two partial recounts, a nonpartisan audit, a conservative law firm's review, numerous state and federal lawsuits, and a Republican-ordered review that found no evidence of widespread fraud before the investigator was fired. And you would agree with that?
I would agree with that. Not only do I agree with that, I would go beyond that and to say, and would you suppose, and that this may or may not be a question, but a theoretical question, that just because it's legit that we eliminate Trump's First Amendment right to say that it wasn't? I mean, it's his right to say, as long as he takes no, you know what I mean?
You're listening to Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski here with WUWM's Mayon Silver. We're hearing the personal opinions of five conservative Wisconsin voters ahead of the presidential election.
Obviously, the spotlight is going to be on Milwaukee with the Republican National Convention and Trump coming to town in July. Mm-hmm. So for all of you as people who live in this area, how do you feel about the RNC coming? Yeah, Rebecca.
Yeah, so I think it's an amazing opportunity for people to see our city and to get to know, you know, who we are and what we do in the city. I think we have a lot of really awesome, places for people to go and visit, restaurants to eat at. I think it's a great way for people to learn about us if they've never been here before, if they don't know about us nationally. I mean, you know, a lot of talk about Wisconsin being a battleground state, but, you know, the biggest city in the state is Milwaukee. And a lot of people pass us by between Chicago and Minneapolis. So I heard that, in the years that people that, you know, run concerts, they go to Chicago, they go to Minneapolis, and they skip us. And why do they skip us? Well, I don't know. There are probably many factors, but this is a chance for us to shine. And I think, in a sense, when COVID hit and when the DNC was supposed to be here, that would have been another opportunity. And I think I'm happy that we have a second chance, considering how the first one with the DNC went, that they kind of shuffled off and weren't really here then because of COVID concerns and that. And I'm happy that, and not only is it that they get to come here, but that it's my party that gets to come here. So I'm happy for that.
Anyone else?
I'm giggly about it. Road through the presidency is coming through Milwaukee County, little old Milwaukee County. I just think it's a good thing for the city overall. I mean, to shine an international spotlight, to be trusted, with so many people coming in and, you know, important dignitaries and so many people, normal people that, again, that just want to just preserve and conserve traditional values. And I think it'll be a good thing for Milwaukee. It'll be talked about for years to come.
Alex H.
Yeah, I think I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to seeing all the young people who are going to be there. Because as we know, our generation is about to become the largest voting population. So I think it's going to be good to get those young voters out there and get them ready to start voting.
All right. You know, to get back to issues that are important to all of you that we've all been talking about, most of you actually have connections to immigration. And so specifically, Giselle, you were born in America, but your family is of Mexican heritage. They're from Mexico. Rebecca, your husband is an immigrant from Costa Rica.
Yes, that's right.
Alex, you're a Jewish immigrant from the former Soviet Union. Alex Romick, you are the son of Serbian immigrants. I was wondering if you could all talk about how that aspect of your life is shaping your views on this election. And Giselle, we can start with you.
Yes, so what my parents have always instilled in me, I'm very proud of my parents, and their sacrifices. What they've always instilled in me was that the key to overcoming was education. And so to me, that's kind of like the hill that I'm going to die on, and why I
kind of like pursued the career that I'm in now. I think that that's something that the Hispanic community values immensely. They want their kids to have a better life than what they had. And I think that journey, that American dream, is still alive. And the way to continue to support it is by giving parents options. And right now, I don't think that our education system is supporting all families and all different types of students. So definitely that would be why I'm more lenient. I'm more leaning towards supporting people that support school choice, because it's just the key to achieving the American dream.
Yet on the issue of immigration itself, you've had criticisms of both parties. Is that not correct?
Yeah. So I think that it's always hard to seeing people that you love or that you respect demonized and generalized more than anything. Because I do understand that there is a lot of ways that we could improve when it comes to our immigration system. But also, there's a lot of things that are done on both sides of the aisles. And politics makes it messy. And it makes it overly emotional when sometimes it's just logical. Like, what makes sense so that we can move forward as a country and continue to be strong?
Alex H., would you like to weigh in?
Yeah, I think it's clear that the Democrat Party will not secure the border. The Republican Party will. My parents came here the fair and legal way, and I don't think it's fair to them that they had to wait to live the American dream while millions of people today can just cut the line and come in for free. It's not fair. Not fair to my parents and millions of people who think that way as well.
Rebecca?
Yeah, and I agree with that. My husband came in the legal way. We actually were living in Costa Rica, and we had to wait out the process for him to get the permission to come in and then to get the green card once he got here. So we, you know, waited the process that way. We waited the process for him to be a nationalized citizen in the country. And what we're seeing on the border is, you know, we have people that are waiting in the immigration system, and they've been waiting for years, and they've been waiting for decades, and they're still waiting. And these are people that have submitted documents, and that we know these people, and we haven't done anything for them, but we're letting all these people that we don't know into our country.
Go ahead, Alex. Alex L.
Every person that escaped the Soviet Union that I know, the ones that actually are immigrants, not the children of immigrants, I don't know of any that are voting Democrat, like not a single one. What people are not seeing, what we can see as immigrants, clear as day, it's right in front of us, is that today's leftism, not Democrat Party per se, is socialism. So anyway, from my perspective on it, and it is clouded by my personal experience in life, I see that the Democrat side today is trying to drive what I escaped, and I'm fighting it.
Well, Greg, Rebecca, Alex Lakin, Giselle Vera, and Alex Romick, thank you all so much for being here today and participating in WWM's second voter roundtable. We really appreciate your willingness to share your views during a contentious political time.
Thank you so much for having us. Mm-hmm.
That was a group of Wisconsin voters: Alex Romick, Giselle Vera, Rebecca Smith, Alex Lakin, and Greg Kennedy. Head to WUWM.com to check out our politics podcast called Swing State of the Union. It explores why Wisconsin is a deeply purple state and why it's so important in this year's election. All 10 episodes are available now and streaming wherever you like to listen to podcasts. In about 15 minutes, we'll learn how Milwaukee Public Schools kids will be helping out during the RNC. But first, Capital Notes breaks down everything you need to know about next week's convention. That's coming up next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. The RNC kicks off a week from today. Here's the latest Capital Notes from WUWM's Mayan Silver, with everything you need to know ahead of the convention.
This is Capital Notes from Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mayan Silver. The Republican National Convention is coming to Milwaukee in a week. J.R. Ross lays out what to expect. He's editor of WizPolitics.com. Welcome, J.R. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Okay, so a little civics basics on the race for president. So while voters across the country had cast ballots for their preferred candidates in primaries, like the one in Wisconsin, and in caucuses, nominees are actually selected by delegates at the national party conventions. Can you break down what a delegate is and what the Republican Party's approach is to choosing delegates for the upcoming RNC in Milwaukee?
Sure. You win delegates by your performance in the election, the primary at each state. Each state has different rules about how they award their delegates and all that kind of good stuff. Those delegates are awarded. They are bound to you when you go to convention. They formally cast their votes for you at convention, and you are formally nominated. It's worth noting, especially with the whole kind of question, push, whatever word you want to use about Joe Biden, that nobody's on the ballot yet in Wisconsin. Doesn't actually happen until the first Tuesday in September, when the party chairs notify the Elections Commission who their nominee is, and then away we go. So there is still time for somebody to change their mind if they wanted to, but right now, the way the system is set up is that you win delegates, they're bound to you, they go to convention, they cast their votes to formally nominate you for the presidency.
And, you know, on that topic, some other big news over the past few weeks was the CNN debate between Trump and Biden and the chatter about how some Democrats are wrestling with Biden's age and his chances of beating Trump. Are you hearing that any Wisconsin Democrats are feeling that someone besides Biden is a good choice for the national party or top of the ticket?
Well, we're seeing signs nationally of people raise concerns or suggest that Biden should drop out. We are not seeing the dam break in Wisconsin just yet. Governor Evers, for example, you know, he hasn't spoken up and said anything negatively about Biden. Neither has Tammy Baldwin or Mark Pocan or Gwen Moore. But, you know, we're still in this kind of odd stage where Democrats are trying to figure out what's going on. They're waiting for outreach from the president to assure them of their concerns. So I would only point out that if there is a push for a change, there is time. But the way the system works is you'd have to have that change ahead of September. If they were to change their minds for a convention, if Joe Biden were to step aside, you know, you could have a vote in open convention where delegates would vote for they wanted to become the nominee. There's time in Wisconsin until, again, the first Tuesday of September to formally say, this is our nominee for president. The challenge was in other states, Ohio, for example. Remember, Democrats are moving up their formal nomination of Biden to make sure they can get him on the ballot in Ohio. So there are early deadlines for other states that's why they're doing stuff like that. But right now for Wisconsin, there's still a little time, not suggesting it's going to happen or arguing for or against it, just saying that that's the option. But once you are formally nominated, once the chair of your party says, this is our nominee and you're on the ballot, the only way to be removed from Wisconsin is via death. Otherwise, you are on the ballot through November.
Well, and one of the things about, we'll jump back to the Republican National Convention in a second, but one of the things about the Democratic process is that in 2024, Biden swept all but one primary or caucus, and mm-hmm. he has the vast majority of delegates. Under those party rules, the pledge is more of a strong expectation by those delegates rather than an ironclad legal obligation that they vote for Biden at the convention. But why is it unlikely for Democrats to remove Biden as their nominee, even if, like, especially if he doesn't step aside?
You know, there's all kinds of time between now and then. I kind of want to avoid speculating.
But they were awarded to Biden. They are Biden supporters. They don't send people who are squishy about Joe Biden or Donald Trump, that example, for that matter, to a convention. These are rock solid Biden supporters. And there's all kinds of talk in the national media about like the pros and cons of trying to replace Biden if he stepped aside. You know, there's a lot that have to happen before we can get into that nitty gritty of what might happen. But it's, you know, it's definitely a conversation. And what it happens is it takes Democrats off their message. They want to talk about abortion. They want to talk about Donald Trump and his various problems, his 34 felony counts. They don't talk about, you know, Trump being a dictator on day one. That's the message they want to send. Instead, they are talking about whether Joe Biden has the ability mentally and physically to be president, not just for four more years, but for the end of this term to win an election against Donald Trump. And it's been notable that Donald Trump is largely post-debate, not done a lot of public events, been pretty quiet. You know, he's popped off on social media here and there, but they are allowing Democrats to kind of have their little moment of chaos and staying back. There's an old saying in politics, if your opponent is drowning, don't throw him a life raft or a life vest, right? You just kind of hang back. And right now, Trump, who is not known for his discipline, is smartly hanging back and allowing Democrats to kind of go at it. The constant discussion about whether Joe Biden should be the nominee, that takes the attention off of Trump's problems.
And speaking of Trump's problems, he was convicted of 34 felony counts for his role in a hush money case in New York. What's the latest on that in terms of its timing with the Republican National Convention?
Well, sentencing looks like it's been delayed. That was going to be kind of an interesting juxtaposition, right? Having him sentenced right before the convention. That's not going to happen now. There are questions about whether the Supreme Court ruling applies to that New York case. There are all kinds of legal issues that are kind of impacted by that. And for Trump, it delays everything. And the more you delay and push it off, the more you less than chance is going to bite you ahead of the election. So there's that going on. And Republicans maybe face fewer questions about that at convention. We'll see. But they are going to go to Milwaukee and they're going to nominate Donald Trump. And away we go.
You're tuned in to Capitol Notes. I'm WEWM's Mayan Silver, speaking with J.R. Ross, editor of WizPolitics.com. Okay, so we were talking about the Republican National Convention. Just under 2,500 Republican Party delegates will gather in Milwaukee for the convention. The prevailing candidate will need 1,215 delegates to secure the nomination. Former President Donald Trump enters the Republican field as the strong frontrunner and is expected to walk away with the lion's share of the delegates. Can you explain to someone who's never watched a convention how the delegate vote casting will unfold in the Fiserv Forum?
Typically what they do is they go state by state, and there'll be somebody picked from the delegation who will say, you know, for example, the great state of Wisconsin, the home of, you know, the Green Bay Packers and the Harley Davidson, and, you know, just kind of a bragging about how great their state is, probably cast its votes X for Donald Trump, you know, that kind of thing. And then people cheer and they go on. So it goes state by state. The Democrats in 2020, because the convention was virtual, did something kind of interesting where there were shots of people in their states. It was kind of a different thing, but it's basically a roll call vote. It's these things are very, very orchestrated anymore. Years ago, there might have been some drama about convention, how things were going to go, but they become very much tightly scripted pep rallies. And, you know, it's all about the message. Republicans want to send a message about Donald Trump, about their vision for America, why they think he's better than Joe Biden. Like, that's what they want to talk about. You'll occasionally see some news, some dissent. Remember in 2016 with Ted Cruz, and, you know, he lost the nomination to Trump, and there was some tension there. People weren't very happy with Ted Cruz's speech. That happens sometimes. It's always interesting to watch to see how the person who loses the nomination, how he or she reacts and the speech they give, if they embrace the nominee. But there's not a whole lot of drama anymore. It's really about, again, driving a message. It's a long campaign ad over 4 days anymore.
A lot of our listeners wanted to know, I mean, Trump is so far ahead of the other rest of the field who has dropped out, but he has more than 2,200 delegates and he needed about 1,215. So they wanted to know, what's the point of a national convention when there's already such a clear presumptive nominee with a runaway number of delegates?
It is kind of like the traditional rally that turns the focus toward the fall. You know, you do get 4 days of coverage in the national media that you're wall to wall about the convention and your speakers, and most nominees of each party get a bump out of convention. It's a phenomenon that's been seen for years, you know, because you get the stage. It's your message, what you want to talk about. It'll be interesting to see, you know, the timing here. Let's say nothing changes. So Donald Trump's nominated formally in July, Joe Biden in August. You know, it's a later convention than normal. Do we see a bump for Joe Biden if the things go as we expect right now? That'll be interesting to see. If you don't get a bump out of convention, sometimes that's a bad sign. But we've seen bumps before that fade quickly. It's just a big rally to formally kick things off and get you rolling toward the November election.
Is there anything that you're watching for besides the nomination process for this convention in Milwaukee?
How they handle the abortion issue. I mean, quite honestly, I've covered two national conventions. There's not a lot of real news anymore. They're tightly scripted speeches and those kinds of things. So I two was enough for me, to be quite honest. But with here, you know, Republicans are dealing with the abortion issue. We've seen reports that Republicans are going to draft their party platform in private. Usually you have it kind of the committee meets in the open. We've seen abortion be an issue before. I can recall Tommy Thompson, when he was governor, trying to navigate that issue back in 2000 when George Bush was the nominee. You know, and it's a real issue for Republicans because you have this part of the base that wants to have a national ban on abortion, period. They are true believers on that cause. Donald Trump has been trying to sound this tone of we need to win elections, and the vast majority of voters aren't there on a national abortion ban. We saw Ron Johnson, the U.S. senator, go to the state convention and say, hey, I know some of you don't want to hear this, but we got to win elections, and calling for a national abortion ban is not going to win us elections, and if we don't win elections, bad things happen. So what will that platform look like? How will it address abortion? I've seen Trump campaign officials say they want a very short platform. They don't want any big document out there. But activists do. They want commitments. They want to see a promise of, okay, I'm going to go bust my butt for you in this election by making phone calls and writing checks and encourage my friends to vote. I want to make sure you're going to deliver on what I want. And if you don't have that enthusiasm, it can cause you some problems. And there are definitely some anti-abortion folks who are going, I'm feeling a little bit uneasy right now about Donald Trump because he keeps telling us to kind of stand down. We don't want to stand down. We want to fight. So how are they going to handle that issue?
And from what you're hearing, there's really no ways that there will be an upset in any way, shape, or form in terms of the actual delegates or anything like that.
No. I mean, you know, that it doesn't happen. These are, again, the people who are delegates, the conventions are ardent supporters of the person they're going for. They are going to go in there to back that person, barring, you know, something unusual, like, you know, a candidate saying, you know what, I changed my mind, I don't want this job anymore. I free my delegates to vote whoever they want to. Otherwise, these people are committed to the candidate that they're sent there for, and they're going to cast votes for him or her.
And it's happening an hour and a half away from Madison, JR. Are you going to go?
No. One of my coworkers has got that gig for the week. I'll be editing stories and working on other stuff here, geeking out on campaign finance reports that are due in mid-July for state and federal candidates. But, you know, it's going to be it's a chance for Milwaukee to show we can pull off a big event. Milwaukee missed its chance with the Democratic convention because it went virtual. You know, and the city has kind of had this, I don't know, kind of like second tier chip on its shoulder for a long time. Like, they're not seen as a Chicago or New York or Miami. But if they can pull this off, then, hey, they might come back again for another convention down the road, Democrats or Republicans. And again, underscores that we are a swing state, an important state. We are one of the ones that truly matter, and that's why Republicans are here. They want to win Wisconsin, and they want to plant a flag starting in July of, like, we are here, we're committed to the state, we're going to try and pick this thing up again for Donald Trump.
All right, well, thanks for filling us in on all things politics, JR, and thanks for joining me on Capitol Notes.
Anytime.
If you have questions about the RNC coming to Milwaukee, fill out our election survey. You can find the link at WUWM.com. What you tell us will help inform the stories you hear on Lake Effect and WUWM. Milwaukee Public School students are getting involved in next week's RNC. We'll tell you how next on Lake Effect. On 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. There will be an additional 50,000 people in Milwaukee during the RNC. Some of those visitors will be greeted by Milwaukee High School students. Milwaukee Public Schools and the Marcus Corporation partnered to launch a student ambassador program for the RNC. The student ambassadors will help welcome hotel guests as they arrive to the city. The hope is that students will learn about the hospitality industry, Milwaukee's history, and the economic impact of the RNC. WUWM Eric Vaughn Fellow Nadia Kelly visited the Hilton Milwaukee City Center Hotel as the students started their training earlier this month.
Businesses all across Milwaukee have been preparing to welcome thousands of RNC visitors. This includes the Marcus Corporation, which owns the Pfister, St. Kate, and 14 other hotels in the country. The company has recruited the help of 15 Milwaukee high school students.
So when you guys are in the hotels for RNC, if you encounter a guest with an issue and you solve it for them, tell each other, tell the manager, tell the associates.
During the week of the RNC, the students will be stationed at the Pfister Hotel and the Hilton Milwaukee City Center, greeting guests as they arrive from out of town and answering any questions they have about navigating Milwaukee. The program is a paid summer internship. To prepare, the students are participating in a five-week-long training. This includes lectures about the hospitality industry and meeting with hotel staff members. Students will also participate in tours of Milwaukee to become more educated on the city's history. High school students Jasmarie Perez and Frida Katoom from Alexander Hamilton High School are excited about what they'll learn. Katoom speaks first.
Well, we're currently learning about hospitality right now, making sure that you have a positive presence when you're talking to the guests, make sure that you're properly representing yourself, those around you, and Milwaukee Public Schools, because that's where we're coming from.
Tomorrow we're going on the hop and we're going to tour downtown, see what it's like, so we know what we're talking about when we're telling guests, oh, like there's this nice restaurant that you could go to hang out with family, it's on this street, so I'm looking forward to touring Milwaukee.
MPS internship coordinator Tamara Coleman and Marcus Hotel's director of talent acquisition, Matt Martin, initially came up with the idea for the ambassador program in 2020, when the Democratic National Convention was coming to Milwaukee. But because of COVID, the DNC was scaled way back. Once Coleman and Martin heard that the RNC was coming to Milwaukee, they revisited the idea and started planning. Here's Coleman.
With the RNC, we were just a little nervous with the whole political environment is very different than it was for the DNC. However, we just thought it would be a great experience for our students to have this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
During the training, the students also get to learn about Milwaukee's political history from local officials. Coleman organized panels, where the students will hear from former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, State Representative Supreme Moore of Mukunde, and Mayor Cavalier Johnson. Jasmine Gray is a senior at Golda Meir High School. She applied for the program because she was interested in developing her communication and leadership skills. But since starting the training, she has enjoyed learning more about Milwaukee and has come to see the city in a new light.
I didn't think Milwaukee was that big, so when I first heard of the Pfister, like how it hosted so many presidents, I was like, whoa, I think it's going to be a rich experience for me.
Catherine Rufer is a teacher at Bayview High School and one of the three teacher leaders who will supervise the students during the ambassador program. She says she feels lucky to experience new things with the students outside of the classroom.
I'm going to be experiencing some things that I never have either. And I've lived in Milwaukee my entire life. Nobody has done it all in Milwaukee. So it's all going to be a learning experience for all of us. So it's kind of cool that we all get to learn together.
Coleman hopes the ambassador program will challenge the students to get out of their comfort zones and maybe even spark an interest in politics or hospitality as a career. She also hopes the program will show the students what makes their hometown so special. I'm Eric Vaughn Fellow Nadia Kelly, 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
That was WUWM Eric Vaughn Fellow Nadia Kelly. For all of our coverage on next week's convention, you can head to WUWM.com/RNC. And that wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Joy Powers. If you missed any of today's conversations, or if you'd like to take Lake Effect on the go, download our podcast. Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to listen to all of our shows on demand. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll help you understand what the perimeter will be during the RNC and how people who live and work in downtown Milwaukee will be impacted. Plus, we'll speak with protest organizers about their plans for the first day of the convention. That's all tomorrow at noon, right here on Lake Effect, on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.